In my program on Whitakerism, I quoted from the movie A Man with All Seasons. And I was kind of glad to do that because that is about as sophisticated as my quotes ever get. Most of my quotes actually come from sitcoms. Now, this isn't very sophisticated. It doesn't look very good. Now, I remember back, 35 years ago, when I was in Washington, and the standard brag of a yuppie, upwardly mobile young professional, was, I never watched television. So in Washington, people would say to me, I never watch television, and I would reply, well, I have to. I'm in politics. They didn't quite understand what I was talking about. They gave me the look that I'm very used to. Have you ever had anybody look at you as if you had a petunia growing out of your forehead? That is more or less the look that they gave me. They didn't understand why my saying I was in politics anything to do with my watching television. After all, politics is what people in Washington did. My point was that if you're going to deal in real-world politics with real-world people, you're going to have to understand where real-world people get their ideas and people in the real world when they come back from a hard day fixing cars or doing the plumbing and so forth. They're not really interested in reading Nietzsche or some sort of book that would impress everybody. They want some relief. They sit around and they watch television. Well, this is regrettable, lower class and so forth, but it is reality. And one thing you learn in politics is you've got to deal with reality. So I watched television, and I have to admit, I enjoyed it. So I like what people say about soap operas. They say, they look ridiculous, but if you really get into one, you finally find yourself worrying about what Mabel said to Jane and so forth. They're entertainment, and they entertain. So, in the sense of watching television, I did, I admit it. I watched television a lot. And a lot of my quotes come from television. And I think one of the reasons my quotes come from television is because underneath all the BS and all the unmitigated crap that you find in popular textbooks or books that are supposed to be read and books that follow the politically correct line, you find in sitcoms sometimes people just say what they mean, and that's funny. And it isn't noticed because, after all, it's not in a book reviewed by the New York Times. It's just in some kind of sitcom. I was watching a sitcom, and the father discovered that his son was a psychopath. Now, a psychopath, by the way, is the same thing as a sociopath. That's just a person who is incapable of feeling guilt. He is incapable of feeling the suffering of someone he has hurt. It sounds terrible. Actually, about 2% of the total population is psychopathic. They have been forced to act as if they had a conscience, but they really don't understand it. Now, the father said was astonished and horrified to find out that his son was a psychopath. This was a comedy show, by the way. And he said, "You feel no compassion for people who are hurt?" And the psychopathic son made a reply that you're not going to find in an intellectual book. He said, "You mean having a conscience means that when somebody is hurt, I feel hurt too?" The boy said, "Why on earth should I want that?" That was an excellent point. Why on earth should anybody want to feel guilt? I remember a German writer once saying that if we said to other people what we say to ourselves, we would be sadists. In other words, if we were as unforgiving toward other people as we are to ourselves, we would consider that awful. To put this in a more fun way, what this German was saying was that if we were as unforgiving towards other people as we are to ourselves, we would never forgive ourselves. It makes you sort of understand why a true psychopath would consider that you and I, people with a normal conscience, are nutcases. Why on earth would we want to have that kind of conscience? In fact, I kind of wonder why, genetically, people who have consciences have survived at all. The people who are true psychopaths, well, let's go back and think about someone who is a true psychopath. I think that's about 2% of the population. They have no idea what we mean by feeling guilty. Reminds me of what one serial killer said. He said, "I've never felt guilty about anything in my life. And I feel sorry for people who have." Well, actually, of course, he wasn't sorry for them. He just didn't understand them. Why on earth should anybody feel guilt? And, of course, guilt is the first step towards suicide. You're not going to catch any sociopaths or any psychopaths committing suicide. They may go out and kill a few other people, but they're not about to commit suicide. So the question is not why psychopaths exist. The question is why people who are not psychopaths exist. The question I just asked was, how is it that those of us who are handicapped with a conscience survive at all? Now, you probably think this was a rhetorical question. Let me bring you up to date. As I have said before, when I sit here talking, I have no idea where I'm going next. And so I took a break there and I thought about it. Well, first of all, there's no doubt about it. Having a conscience is a handicap. Not only that, it's a painful handicap. On the other hand, a society made up entirely of psychopaths is not going to survive. There has to be some instinct for a society to survive, there has to be loyalty, fellow feeling. We're societal animals, and therefore we have to have some feelings which a psychopath does not have. But once again, the question comes up, yes, but how do we survive in a one-to-one environment against sociopaths who will do anything to achieve their ends? One of the ends, of course, is having sex and having children. And here we are, us guys who worry about how women feel or love or all this stuff. Here's a psychopath whose only interest is, by God, I feel horny, I'm going to relieve it. You and I have heard all the conventional wisdom. The ruthless guy wins. Good guys finish last. And while we may quote that as a joke, we believe it. The fact is that we've read books like How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying and Parkinson's Law and all those things. So reduce everything to the fact that if you are rational, if you really seek your self-interest, you will be the survivor and everybody else won't. The natural conclusion of this is that the psychopath should be the ultimate survivor in terms of genetics and in terms of ruling the world. So why aren't psychopaths, instead of being 2% of the population, even that percentage sort of surprised me, because we're talking about a pretty extreme condition here. We're talking about people who could throw acid into children's faces and not feel bad about it at all. Let me repeat that. We're talking about people who could throw acid into a child's face and not feel particularly guilty about it. Now, these are the people who, according to all the macho ideas I keep hearing about survival and getting ahead, these are the people who should constitute the 98% of our gene pool, and 2% should consist of sort of suffering people like me who have an actual conscience. Now, I need to remind you once again of something I've said before, but as I keep repeating it, you may understand the implications. When you're listening to the average or the normal commentator, and he asks a question like the one I asked just now, why is it that we people with a conscience survive at all? He is asking a rhetorical question, and so you lean back and wait for him to answer it. The problem is that I am not asking a rhetorical question. I'm really puzzled about the corner I have just talked myself into. How is it that people with a conscience genetically survive? I gave myself a couple of minutes to think about this problem, and it sort of relates back to the program that I did on a Whitakerism. A Whitakerism is looking at reality, and a lot of times I catch people completely by surprise because I mention or I talk about or I analyze the obvious. For example, the fact that people who keep saying that white people are not superior or white people shouldn't survive or white people are necessary constitute part of an enormous army of people who are trying to explain away the obvious position of white people in the world. So I have to say first that the reality that I am stating as Whitaker is entirely different from the logic that I am following. That is to say, according to the logic that I have followed, psychopaths should be the only surviving peoples on the earth. On the other hand, the reality is that they aren't. And that is overwhelming. Now, all the people who write books about how to be a success without trying and so forth, and all the people who talk about macho man and all these other things, come to the conclusion that people with a conscience shouldn't be here at all. My conclusion is that since that is not the case, then there must be a reason why we survive. If I sound a bit disorganized, it's because I am. I'm sitting here trying to figure out why it is that in Western society, a very 98% of the population has a conscience, and we're somewhat surprised that 2% of the population does not. Now, it reminds me of an old joke after World War II about an American GI who was in Germany in the occupation, and he went up to a German guard, and he said, "How do I get to so-and-so?" Now, the German guard said, "You turn this corner and you turn that corner, you go right and go left." And the GI said, "Well, thank you very much." And the German grabbed his arm and said, "Don't thank me, repeat what I said." In other words, Americans thought of Germans as the kind of people who took the facts so seriously. They weren't interested in gratitude or anything. They wanted you to get it right. This often happens when someone has been fighting an enemy that they respect. But the Germans are known for taking truth very very seriously. They aren't real big on diplomacy, or at least that's our picture of them. They are very serious. And of course, we kind of laugh at that. But I got a pretty extreme example of it. I spent a lot of time in the Third World. And the people in the Third World don't take what you and I would consider truth all that seriously. I remember in Africa, I had to adjust to the fact that an African has real trouble understanding why we are so obsessed with the truth, the objective truth. And again, you have to look at the way we sort of flattered the Germans by making that joke about the guard grabbing the arm and saying, "Don't thank me, repeat." Well, take the extreme of that. In Africa, the obsession with an abstract truth that strikes you and me as so important is considered a bit odd. The point is what you say what the person you're talking to wants to hear? Why should you be sidetracked by this truth business, by the fact that something is actually true or not? Or as someone in political correctness would say, whether something is, quote, actually true, unquote, or not. I've really talked myself into a corner here, because I also know an evolutionary reality. In the end, it is the men who do the strutting back and forth, and the women who make the choices. The women choose the men. So then I look at all the books about how to seduce women or how to make women love you and all that sort of thing. And once again, all those books give me excellent advice on how to be a psychopath. You flatter women, you use the right words at the right time. I think all of us have been through this. Women are interested in men who are, quote, fun, unquote. They're interested in men who are able to tell them the right thing at the right time. Well, nobody is better at telling anybody the right thing at the right time than a good, solid psychopath. Psychopaths actually have a terrific advantage over the rest of us, because whereas if you or I were hit with a piece of horrible news, and I've been in that position a lot of times, having to give people awful news, our reaction may be really weird. We could laugh out loud. Sometimes we just would draw inside ourselves. And if you were to bring up our reaction in a court, people would say, well, he didn't really express real regret. Well, I'll tell you something. The psychopath will express real regret. The thing about psychopath is all those years we developed normal impulses, they learned to live in our society. The fact is that an intelligent psychopath can come up with the perfect reactions. Whereas you and I, since our reactions come from within ourselves, will not be anywhere near perfect. They're going to strike people as weird. That's why the pulpit is so full of psychopaths. Think about the kind of person who can stand there, look you straight in the eye and say, God, who is in control of heaven and hell, is going to judge you. And I am going to speak for God. Most of us would be terrified of saying that. So the pulpit has to be full of people who are not terrified of that at all. They treat it as a game because they know, from their point of view, they've always been puzzled by this game the 98% of us who are not psychopaths play. It's sort of like a tone-deaf person who's listening to music. He really can't believe he's sitting there and listening to all these people shouting in the choir, and these people hitting these notes on the organ. They all sound the same to him. And he's absolutely, well, sort of puzzled that somehow all these people are getting something out of these random noises he keeps hearing. Psychopaths is in exactly the same position. But he has to learn how to act guilty. And he learns it very well. Let me tell you something. An intelligent psychopath can act guilty in precisely the right way, in a way that you or I could simply not match. Even a 99% atheist like me, who is from the Bible Belt, simply could not stand in the pulpit and declare that he represents the infallible will of God. So all those pulpits, not all of them, but a heavy proportion of them, are occupied by good, solid psychopaths who have no problem with this sort of thing. And I think we found that out with the scandal of the Catholic priests. And not the Catholic priests, so much the Catholic bishops. There was not a single Catholic bishop who did not know that children were being repeatedly abused and that other bishops were taking the priests who abused children and moving them around. Let me tell you something about the Catholic Church. You would have to be a real idiot to be a bishop who did not know this was coming on, this was going along. And you don't get to be a bishop in the Catholic Church if you're an idiot. They all, every single bishop knew it. A lot of them may not have been psychopaths. I'm supposed to say that, but I don't believe it. And this is by no means confined to the Catholic Church. I have had experience with the mainline Protestant denominations, with the Jerry Falwells, with the Pat Robertsons, and I still am waiting around to find a major clergyman who is not a psychopath. Well, that's a horrible condemnation. I'm waiting for people to come down on me. But in the meantime, the question still remains, why is it that consciences survive? I've given myself a break because the fact is that they do survive. So it's not a question of abstract argument. It's a question of understanding why. It occurred to me that consciences survive because you can't herd cats. We are a social animal, and we have been a social animal at least since the death of the dinosaurs. So our society survives as a result of loyalty. This loyalty is, of course, a rather silly idea from the point of someone who is writing a self-help book or somebody who is telling you how to get ahead or somebody who's telling you how to be macho. It really doesn't make any sense being part of the group, being loyal to the group. I remember reading books, Audrey's books particularly, about how animals would sacrifice their lives for the good of the group. Now, I'm not talking about mother love. I'm talking about some unattached male who would give his life to protect the group. Now, that doesn't make any sense at all in terms of our current literature. But that's the only way you survive. A group which is made up entirely of a bunch of psychopaths, each of which is only interested in himself, is not a group. They can't defend themselves. It's sort of like the movies we see by Jewish producers, where everybody is shoving everybody else up in front. You really do need somebody who says, "These are my people." And he goes and sticks himself in the front. I was watching a Woody Allen movie where he was in the Russian army and he was saying, "Well, let me find the man that I'm supposed to be opposing and I'll come to a reasonable accommodation with him." Well, that's fine for Woody Allen and the Jewish outlook, but The problem is, if the entire army tries to do that, it will collapse. So maybe what I'm saying reduces to Whitakerism. It's so obvious that nobody notices it. The fact is that for a social animal, treason, a lack of loyalty to the group, is the ultimate sin. In fact, I think in our ancestors, and again I say our monkey ancestors, or our common line with the monkeys, maybe they had a little more morality than we do. If some member of their group had decided to make a separate peace with the enemy, they would have ripped him to pieces. You cannot survive without loyalty. Now, in logical terms, that is to say in the terms we talk today about getting ahead in the organization, about being a macho male, about persuading females to go to bed with you and all that stuff, this whole loyalty bit is absurd. And I have come to this conclusion while making this broadcast, because I knew that there had to be a reason why we're not all psychopaths. But I had to talk it out with myself. And if somebody else happens to be listening in, you're welcome to listen in too. But the point is, going back to, I guess you'd call it Whitaker's first rule, reality is real, not theory. And for some reason, we really are a group where psychopaths were much more comfortable in their lives. Psychopaths, the people that seek their own advantage the way every self-improvement book tells you to do, are a very tiny minority. So there has to be a reason for that. And the reason for that seems to be that we value loyalty, despite all the things about a woman is desperately interested only in a man who tells her that she's beautiful, or tells her that she's smart, or tells her the right things at the right moment. Apparently, it's just not true. We are a social animal, and loyalty shows. And I think in the end, we can tell the difference between a man who is loyal to his own group and a man who is seeking the best deal he can get at the moment. Well, I sort of hope so, because I like to think I'm in the latter category. This is Bob Whitaker, the untrained eye, and as you can see, Lord, is my eye untrained, and I hope to talk to you once again.